It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Hi, I'm Gretchen Hansen, sitting in for Don Rush on Delmarva Today. With the death of Anthony Bourdain last week, the restaurant industry has plunged into introspection. While notoriously the bastion of creative and charismatic people, a spotlight has been trained on its more seedy underbelly and prevalent problem of drug and alcohol addiction. While no one has blamed Bourdain's death on drugs, his highly popular book, Kitchen Confidential, talked about the seedy underbelly of the industry. Today, I will explore the prevalence of drug addiction in the restaurant industry with my guests, Patrick Dubow, the director of peer recovery services at the Fellowship Health Resources, currently pursuing his master's in public health, Matthew David Kroll, who is generally a bartender, just not quite at this moment, and Valerie Hess, a chef de cuisine in New Orleans. We are going to be bringing in Valerie later in the show and starting with Matthew. And I am your host, Gretchen Hansen, a chef, comma writer, and former restaurateur. And I've also had my own Bourdain-esque experiences on the other side of the restaurant industry. I worked in New York City the same time as Bourdain and doing many of the same things, including the drugs. 20 years later, I found myself on the nightly line with over 20 years drug-free, dealing with most of my employees who were addicted. Matthew, I'm going to start with you. Could you tell us how your addiction began and how you have dealt with its consequences, including that of becoming sober?
Oh, wow. My addiction began all the way back in 23, at age 23. I was raised in a very fundamentalist upbringing. And I, being that D.C. was an hour and a half away, it was a very quick escape, and I just decided to dive headlong into basically sex, drugs, and rock and roll, except for the rock and roll was club music. So fast forward, substance abuse has been a part of my life in less or more ever since until recently. And I actually lost a job this past time a couple months ago because I was so messed up, I just didn't even bother to show up to work.
Okay. The connection between the restaurant industry and addiction is clear, and studies conducted by the National Institute of Health to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services said that the highest rate of illicit drug use and addiction were found in restaurant workers at almost 17%. Patrick, how can you speak to the incidence of addiction in the hospitality industry, and what do you attribute this to?
Well, hi, Gretchen, and thank you for having me on your program today.
Thanks for being here.
I think there's a few things that attribute to the problem, and that is, restaurants are less likely to perform drug testing and or to post any type of drug information and policy in the workplace. And for servers and bus people and bartenders, that work produces cash on a daily basis. So that can be a bit of a temptation just to start off with. One of the other things we find is that in restaurants, as a one of the perks, you know, you're often offered your shift drink or two drinks after work. So alcohol and drug abuse has become a commonplace situation in the hospitality field, and particularly in the restaurant field.
So, Matthew, were you drawn into the profession by any of the things that Patrick just discussed, lack of drug testing, lack of drug info, the cash that's available, the shift drinks, the lifestyle?
I wouldn't say, if anything, not those, maybe the lifestyle. And by saying that, I would say that I was never really drawn to the 9-to-5, let's raise the family, get a house, mow the lawn, and accumulate things mantra. It never appealed to me. So the restaurant industry seems to me to appeal to people who want a more diverse life experience, I guess, or unconventional, and kind of buck societal norms more on a regular basis, I would say. I think that's what appealed to me more. I was started out in corporate America, more or less, and I got very disillusioned with it because of the inauthenticity I saw all around me.
So, Patrick, one of the things that I've discussed with many people on social media prior to this show is that the intensity of the restaurant lifestyle, the getting ready for shifts and then pounding it out on the restaurant line for 5 hours, and then the need to decompress after the shift leads people to use drugs to decompress and then drugs to wake up the next morning when you get to do your 18-hour day all over again. How do you think that that has affected the incidence of addiction?
I think that plays a big part. I think that having that life-work balance is complicated, especially when you're working at night shifts for restaurants. There are very long hours and double shifts. There's intense hours of work. And, you know, if you're in the resort areas, as we are, and I've worked them up and down the East Coast, it is easy to get to work. You may hang around for an hour, hour and a half before you get busy, and then all of a sudden the restaurant fills up. You're pounding it out, as you say, working in fifth gear until the end of the night, till maybe midnight. And that decompression at night, it's hard to go out and then find something like, although there are gyms that are open, that's generally not what people do, or, you know, you're not really able to go to the beach or whatever other things are available. So you tend to commiserate with your fellow employees and go out and drink and do drugs, whether you made great money or you didn't make great money.
So that percentage of 17% is especially jarring when you consider that the restaurant industry is the second highest employer in the United States. And with no union representation, that means that these jobs are generally accompanied by poor pay, inconsistent schedules, and no medical coverage. So those high turnover rates mean that you can just get a job anywhere else. As soon as you lose a job in certain restaurants, you can just go to another restaurant. How do you feel that that has impacted the incidence of addiction, Patrick?
Oh, I think that's, you know, very easy. You know, for areas like us in Rehoboth, where it's a small beach town, you may get to be known as that person that's not able to be depended on because of your drug or alcohol abuse. But you also might be one of the highest producers, and you may be given a chance and looked over some of your deficits in that area. And I think that's a big problem, of course. In the cities or larger areas, yes, you can go, you know, as long as you've got your a lot of people don't even call for references. If you're showing, I worked at this great restaurant, I worked at that great restaurant, and you produce well at the interview, a lot of times you'll just go walk into a waiter's job or a bus position, and then you can even work your way up if that's the situation.
You know, that's interesting because one of my sous chefs, I must have hired and fired him three or four times. And he was such a great producer when he was using heroin as a medication, as he called it. And he was so awful when he would try and go off that I could just, he was unreliable and I couldn't actually keep him.
Right.
So it was one of those things where he was a functional heroin addict, but a completely dysfunctional, clean, I wouldn't call them clean, but not using, if that makes sense.
Right.
Does that ring
and
true?
So for companies like ours who offer Vivitrol and Suboxone, these are great opportunities for people that are struggling with addiction with heroin. Vivitrol can be used for both heroin and for alcohol abuse. The Vivitrol is an antagonist or a blocking medication. So it blocks the opioid receptors in the brain, and it gives people a chance to prevent relapse while they're trying to detox and focus on treatment and counseling.
Pat, Matthew, does that inability to decompress ring true in your experience?
You know, the restaurant industry is a go, go, go kind of thing. So when you do, you decompress, you almost, your brain almost decides to decompress in the way that it has to rev up, which is suddenly and dramatically. It's like all of a sudden you're super busy and you're having to work at a level that is almost impossible at times. And then you get through that and you're like, oh my gosh, I made it. Now I have to reward myself. And instead of being sensible, since you've been going in this oversized motion all night, you do your celebration oversized too. Your brain just stays in that rut of go big or go home.
So
and I think if I can inject that,
yes, please.
You know, most restaurants, we want to produce a party atmosphere, at least not, you know, like outrageous party, but we want people to be having fun. So we're offering cocktails and we're offering delight and food and all these joys. So it's kind of a party atmosphere from when you walk in until you leave.
So we used to call it being in the weeds when we're in the restaurant and we're in that position where you're just pumping it out and pumping it out and there's no end in sight. And almost being in the weeds triggers that adrenaline response that you can't get with anything else. And I know for me, even though I wasn't using cocaine when I had my restaurant, I was addicted to that feeling of just being alive and pumping out hundreds of covers on a Saturday night and how that made me feel. Is that something that you've experienced, Matthew?
Oh, my gosh, yes. say it's a Saturday night and you have a bar tickets ringing through behind you and 20 to 30 bar guests sitting at seats in front of you, when you're able to actually handle that business, and not only handle it, but do it smoothly and with a smile, mm-hmm. and have mastered it, you feel like you're like Yoda-level Jedi at that point. And the rush is inexplicable.
I absolutely understand that. I mean, when I would walk out after filling the last ticket, there was just this absolute joy of, or upset, you know, depending on how the night had gone, but this just rush of, wow, I just did that. I made all these people happy.
Yeah, and sometimes you want to continue that rush. You want that feeling to stay, and I think that can lead to some of the substance abuse.
Yeah, well, that sense of euphoria.
That sense of euphoria. I noticed when I was using back in my late teens and early 20s, when I was using, it was more, I was lower on the pay scale and I didn't own my own restaurant, but it was more a just getting through the night kind of thing. And that's what everyone did after hours. Where when I got older and wasn't using, it was more a, I need to drink to go back to sleep so I can get up in the morning and do it again. Does that make sense? Patrick, in your experience?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes.
So, where do most of your subjects come from, your patients come from? Do they come from the hospitality side? Do they come from the kitchen side? What side are they from, and is it all over the board? What ages are they? How could you?
It really is. We see individuals in our company here at FHR that come from across the spectrum of life. We have had in our groups from 18 to 75, I believe our one lady was. And this is from all walks of life. I think what we're finding today, the stress level in society is so intense. Drugs are so rapidly available, as is alcohol, that it becomes the choice of how to relax and decompress.
So you were talking about the incidence of addiction becoming more prevalent in older people. Could you explain some of the reasons that is?
What's that again? I'm sorry?
You were saying how the levels of addiction are more prevalent now in older people than before. Can you explain some of the reasons for that?
I was talking to you the other day at the recent opioid addiction conference in Dover. We discovered that in Delaware, 12% of our opioid abusers are of the senior or above 50 age range, which seems shocking to a lot of people, but not really. Older people are having a lot more pain and issues. And for years, doctors were of the mindset of handing out anything for pain relief. Recently, as far as this year, actually, new requirements have gone into effect as of April 1st, 2017, for prescribing for long-term pain opioids and looking at doing that safely. The governor's PDAC, the Prescription Drug Action Committee, has really gotten into action along with Public Health and the Medical Society of Delaware to try to make distinct changes in how prescribing is happening. But when people have been prescribed and they become addicted because heroin and now with fentanyl and carfentanil are so quickly addicted that we're trying to find ways to, across the board in Delaware, relieve this problem.
So what percentage of your clients do you believe come from the restaurant or hospitality industry?
You know, it's really hard to say because we have such a varied group, but I would say a significant part of our individuals we see over time are certainly in the hospitality field. There is a high level of stress. We recognize that. We also see an issue of co-occurring incidences with mental health, such as anxiety, depression. So factoring that in with addiction is a complicated situation.
Do you think that they go hand in hand often, the depression and the addiction?
I believe so, because alcohol is a depressant, as are many of our drugs that are street drugs or prescription drugs. So if you already have a propensity to be depressed or have anxiety, if you're going to include alcohol and drugs into your system, you're depressing your system even more so at that point, which exacerbates any mental health issues.
Patrick, do you think that the restaurant industry has such a high incidence of addiction because it is one of the few fields that you can get a job where you've had a stint in jail not affecting your employment history?
Oh, sure. I think that's a big factor. I hear often from individuals I'll see in counsel that you know, some of their legal background issues prevent them from finding work that they would rather find in other areas. And also, if you've had an experience and you're in a crisis with a criminal situation or have been to jail or out of jail, there's always this catch-up factor. People are trying to catch up quickly. So cash on hand mm-hmm. is very appealing as well to find that kind of work.
I know that I used to hire out of work release for the predominant reason that I knew they were drug tested every single night, and I knew they couldn't come to work being high. So I knew at least for the stint that they were in work release, they would stay sober. Now, generally, the minute they got out of work release, they started using again, but at least that period of time that they were in work release, they were accountable and would stay sober. Is that something that you feel is effective in treatment, incarceration, or is that just a stopgap?
Well, I think that's very individualized. I see folks that incarceration has made an impact on them and others where it really doesn't. Sometimes when we're looking at the underlying factors of co-occurring issues of mental health, we're also talking about issues of trauma or childhood trauma that people haven't resolved. So we need to dig deeper at times. That's why our outpatient intensive treatment program is so helpful here. We run that 4 days a week, two programs a day. And we work with people about not only their addictions, but what's going on for them in their mental health or what's happened in the past that they haven't resolved. So I think that the work release is an interesting program. And certainly, like you say, while people are in it, you have that opportunity for the drug testing and to assure what's going on. But I think this is indicative of what all companies might want to be looking at, such as our company where we have an employment assistance program. And these discussions really need to be talked about with all staff members about the prevalence. It's all known. It's just not really talked about a lot in restaurants. So from the top, from your supervisor on, you know, letting people know, if you find you're having a problem, please come to me. We can offer this and that. Or for like our company, FHR, we could associate with other restaurants and hotels in this area to provide them services. So I think it's important for the restaurant industry to reach out to treatment facilities like ours, and as well as us to reach out to them.
Matthew, you mentioned that you had gotten into sobriety because you were fired from a job because you showed up high or didn't show up at all. Was that the only reason? Because it would have been easy for you to get another job in the industry doing something else. I mean, with the shortage of employees and qualified employees, especially a bartender like you in this industry, was there something deeper?
That was not the main reason.
Okay.
It was quality of life for me. Losing the job was a wake-up call. And it wasn't enough of a wake-up call right away because I kind of plunged myself into a couple months span of self-pity and self-medication, where I was just like, I wasn't consciously thinking screw life, but I was kind of living out that idea with the way I was not honoring myself and my actions. I got to a point where I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, I'm looking old and gaunt. And so I think part of it might have been a little pride because I do like looking good. But another part of it was I felt my soul was dying inside. You know, I was killing myself slowly, and I want better things for myself. And I'd like to get back in the service industry, but when I do it, I want to be the best version of myself or progressing toward that better version of myself before I do it. So I'm in a place where I'm honoring both myself and my employer and giving my best.
Thank you, Matthew, for joining us. Your journey is certainly inspiring, and I really appreciate your being a guest here. I'm going to bring in Val Hess, who's a chef de cuisine from New Orleans, to join the discussion. Patrick, I'm going to keep you on the line, if you don't mind.
That's great.
So, Val, welcome. Patrick, I wanted to go back to what you had said about childhood trauma. You sent me a PowerPoint presentation that you did about childhood trauma and how it affects addiction. One of my questions was, and this is extrapolating a bit, do you think maybe victims of childhood trauma are drawn into the restaurant industry as I call it in my memoir, the siren call of chaos, and they're drawn to that industry because of the trauma, and the addiction happens to be a side effect as well? That makes sense?
I think that childhood trauma, which runs across a lot of lines, and if anyone's interested, the Adverse Childhood Experience Study is out there to look at. And we have distinct data and science behind all of that, how situations of child abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse it affects children and adults over a lifespan and can take a toll. So a lot of times we find people that have a lot of low self-esteem issues, which plays into then if you're not feeling great about yourself, you're not taking care of yourself either, whether physically or with your diet or exercise. So we find over a lifespan that this can be very complicated and that drugs and alcohol certainly play a part in that, as well as some mental health issues. Once we can work with people in a trauma-informed care way, we can help people try to find peace with their past as best they can and help them move on from that. That stuff that just somehow all the stigma and everything that wraps around it, the taboo subjects, somehow never get talked about or addressed, and they come out sooner or later in your life.
In my own experience, that rings incredibly true, because when I was younger in the restaurant industry, I certainly hadn't dealt with my childhood trauma. And yet when I'm older, having 20 years of therapy under my belt, I had made peace with my past and was able to not use, I think, because of the fact that I had worked so hard on putting it behind me.
Yes.
Is that what you see in recovery with your clients?
Yes, and for folks that don't take care of those issues, the science is out there now to show us that, first of all, it can be, even on MRIs, we can see a difference in the brain function and can really change your life in the direction of your life. These issues are hard to deal with, but they're important to deal with. And sometimes you can't make perfect peace with the past, but every time you do, you work on it, you make a better situation for your life.
Valerie, I'd like to welcome you to the show. We've been talking about the rate of addiction in the restaurant industry as being at 17%. And I know you have similar experiences that I've had as being the only one not using as in the kitchen. How has this affected your job, your ability to do your job, and how you perceive our industry?
Oh, thank you for having me today. I think for me, when you kind of get the reputation of being the sober person in the kitchen, you also inadvertently get the job of enabling everybody else. And because it takes a team to make a line work, you're the person that's left picking up the slack and making excuses and driving people home or picking people up when they've caught a DUI. And you kind of get stuck in the general enabler job, which is exhausting, to be perfectly honest.
Wow, that rings so true in my own experience as well, because when I was in my 40s and running my own restaurant, that's exactly what I did. I mean, they all called me mommy, and they all called me to pick them up after their DUIs, and they all would slack on the job, and I would be the one calling the line, doing the line, running the food, because there was no one else to do it. And I realized, I think, more than anything else, what I was doing what you were saying, which was enabling. I was allowing them to continue their bad behavior, like firing and rehiring because they were, you know, at least functional.
Exactly. And when you get to the point where you can't take it anymore and you decide that it's not helping anybody to be their enabler, you find that you can't do everything in the kitchen by yourself, so then you're really stuck out. And like you said, you keep hiring back the people that have screwed you over in the past.
So Bourdain's book, he calls this an irrational masochistic desire to cook.
Yeah.
Do you feel that that is in you as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm at a point in my career now where friends will bring me their kids who think they want to be chefs when they grow up, and I just tell them, no, I think you should go to law school. This is a terrible job for somebody that thinks they want a job. It's a calling. It's a vocation. It's kind of obsessive. This job just attracts addictive personalities for the adrenaline rush on the line on a Friday night, for knowing that you could pull off the impossible wedding that nobody thought would happen. For all of these reasons, we do this. But we're doing it for like the little next bump of adrenaline or whatever else we choose to use.
So, Valerie, the statistic of 17% seems awful low to me because, I mean, I look at that statistic and while it's horrifying, I also know that there were times that I was the only one that wasn't using in my restaurant other than my 16-year-old daughter and my bartender, Ramon. I mean, And that's a staff of 35 people.
Sure.
Have you had similar experiences? Because I think the statistic is remarkably underreported.
Well, if you look at the general public, I think what people consider using and what is actually using are probably two completely different things. Now, do I have a drug and alcohol problem? Oh, I certainly do not have an drug or alcohol problem. I just smoke a little weed when I get off work, or I have a couple of cocktails when I get off work. But that's not really a problem for them.
Right.
I think you'd see that in any kind of business. You know, just because we don't drug test, there's plenty of culinary jobs that do drug test, hospitals, hotels, big convention centers. They all drug test their employees all the time. Some places only test if you get injured. Some places test on the regular. So I think that the general, whatever the general population's drug and alcohol, I think it's just as underreported in culinary.
So Kyle Magnuson, who is the founder of Restaurant Recovery, said you get sucked into this underworld because you think it's normal, but it's not. You never think your problem is that bad because you can always find someone worse to compare yourself to. Does this ring true with addictive personalities, Patrick?
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. And I just want to backtrack for a second because some things Val was saying also reminded me of one of the pieces of this is, most of us are big people pleasers, too, that work in this industry. So we go out of our way, work long hours, work hard shifts to people please. But you're absolutely right. I think that a lot of people don't really identify with what their real issue is or where they're at with that. And I think that's a lot of self-education that could happen as well. For instance, the DEA has an amazing resource in just DEA.gov that you can go in and find out about any drug, because your drug dealer may be telling you one thing or your doctor who's prescribing you something, but do you actually know what you're putting in your system? So you can go on DEA.gov and find every drug on there and find out what it does for you and what it does for you adversely.
So back to my question about addictive personalities, does that ring true in this industry that you can always find somebody worse to compare yourself to, so addictive personalities self-justify?
I think that whenever we're in our addictions, and I had my own experiences in the past, we're very good at justifying and not seeing the realities of what's really happening to us. As Matthew just mentioned, he came to a point where he looked in the mirror and went, I don't like what I'm seeing. But we can spend many, many years justifying and reasoning out why we do the things we do.
So, Valerie, some of the experiences that I've had in the kitchen, you've also experienced similarly with people using and then hiding their addiction. Could you tell me some of the things that have happened to you?
I lost my brother to alcoholism in 2011. He was the nicest drunk you'd ever meet. We did not know that he had a problem for a long time because he was just another one of the party boys who would have a couple or six or seven beers after work and was always down for a good time. He never got a DUI. He never got in bar fights that I know of. He wasn't an obnoxious drunk. He was just a nice, chill dude, and we didn't realize until years later what the depth of his problems were. Now, I'm probably not a good resource for any of that kind of knowledge, because now looking back at my childhood, which is something that, you guys were talking about earlier, there's probably a good reason for that. I was raised in a household where drinking a fair bit was considered quite normal, really. The old-fashioned three martini lunch and cocktails at happy hour, that was kind of my parents' lifestyle for a really long time, and it normalized it for me. So when Steve was doing the same kind of things, it didn't really strike me as exceptional when I compared it to everybody else. But eventually, he told us that he couldn't take it anymore, and he did some rehab work, and eventually we lost him in kind of a really public and difficult way. He was admitted to University Hospital in liver and kidney failure and spent almost 2 weeks in ICU, and eventually he didn't make it. And so going back into a kitchen after that, it was difficult for me because he was also a chef and he was somebody that I really liked to cook with. So the one escape, the one real pleasure that I had in my life, which was cooking and feeding other people, has now been kind of colored by this experience. So it's something that I love to do, and I find different ways to do it, but I'm not ever going back into a restaurant again.
That must have been a really hard experience for you, and I thank you for sharing that story. That certainly demonstrates and illustrates the problem that we face in our industry. I'm Gretchen Hansen, sitting in today for Don Rush on Delmarva Today. I'd like to thank my guest, Patrick DeBow, the director of Peer Recovery Services, Valerie Hess, a chef de cuisine in New Orleans, and Matthew David Kroll, who is a bartender, just not quite at this moment. I'd like to thank you all for sharing your stories, for sharing your knowledge, and for sharing your journey. And I want to say thank you, and I'll be with you again next time. My name is Chef Gretchen Hansen. You can follow me at chefgretchenhansen.com.